So I'm in the Forecroft Hotel on the 15th of September with Chris Osborne, and we're going to talk about the Sea Empress oil spill in 1996 and his memories of that.
Well, I guess the first memory is one day after it started hitting the news, I went for a drive across the Clairvaux Bridge, and I couldn't see anything, but you could absolutely smell. The whole of the air was just like sort of being in a petrol station and open the nozzle of one of the petrol pumps. And it was just heavy, heavy oil. And that was disconcerting. What was to come was much worse. For a couple of days, the oil was sort of out in the sea and we didn't really know where it was going. But I think it was the third day, the wind changed direction and it hit Tenby big time. And I remember waking up in the morning and going to look at the beach and those beautiful, beautiful contours of pristine golden sands had been replaced by what appeared to be a big brown moose. And the entire North Beach was just covered in this big, brown, gloopy moose. And if you looked around the railings of the roads that overlook the North Beach, you'd just see loads and loads and loads of locals who'd come out to have a look at their glorious beach. And you were just standing there, like I was, just watching in sort of horror, really. And the town went into some sort of depression, and people would talk to each other, for sure. But obviously the main topic was the oil and what was going to happen to the rest and how it was going to be got rid of. And the impacts it was likely to have on Tenby's economy, which is heavily dependent upon tourism. And one of the byproducts, strangely, was at the time I was a member of the Pembrokeshire Hotels and Restaurants Association, and it had a membership of about 150 hotels and restaurants, mostly around Tenby and Saunersfoot. And it used to have meetings and 20 or 30 people would come. And shortly afterwards, after they announced the involvement of the IOPC, which I think is the International Oil Producers Compensation Scheme, which is contributed to by the oil producers, and their representative in the UK, a certain captain somebody, came down to talk to a meeting of the PHRA, which was gathered at the Imperial Hotel in their restaurant, and instead of the usual 20 or 30, all 91 members turned up and listened to the compensation application process and the likely success or not, or whether they would be compensated for the losses. And their losses, strangely, were more a result of the media attention than the appearance of the oil. And certainly we had heard of hotels in North Wales whose coaches had cancelled their tours because the assumption was the whole of Wales was overtaken with this oil. And of course it was just media attention. It also signalled the beginning of my media career, insofar as I suppose over the years done lots of radio and TV interviews. Nearly always to talk about tourism and where it is, and mostly it's about Tenby and South Pembrokeshire. And I had been asked to do an interview on the South Beach with the then chief executive of the Wales Tourist Board, a guy called John French, who was appointed as he left the army, and nobody could quite understand why he was appointed, and 6 months later he was no longer the chief executive of the Wales Tourist Board. But anyway, his first official engagement was this interview with him and me sitting on deck chairs on the South Beach, and there was a beautiful blue sky, but it was about March, and although by then nearly all the oil had been disappeared from the South Beach and indeed from the North Beach, because it was just the most astonishing cleanup campaign, John French and I had to sit on deck chairs, and we had to look as though it was a really hot day because the blue sky behind us. And the guy interviewing us from the BBC was a guy called John Minnell. Now, John has gone on to greater things and for a while was the international correspondent for BBC in the Middle East. And I think he still performs the same role, but for the radio. And this was John's first interview. And he kept fluffing his lines. So we had to do 5 takes of this interview with John just fluffing it each and every time he introduced it. And by the time we got to the 5th interview, we were supposed to be, you know, enjoying the benefits of this gorgeous sunshine. We'd both turned blue. We were freezing. The cleanup campaign was hugely impressive, and despite the concerns of organisations like Friends of the Earth about, as they called it, gender bending chemicals which were used, it was just the most amazing campaign. And the very fact that some 6 weeks later, unless you knew, you probably wouldn't have been able to tell that there'd been an oil spill which would have affected most of the beaches in Pembrokeshire, although they obviously concentrated, I say they, Pembrokeshire County Council, first and foremost concentrated on getting the ones which were specifically populated by tourists sorted first, because at the end of the day, it was the tourism economy we were trying to ensure didn't suffer too much. Just the most amazing cleanup campaign. And some 6 months later, even in the rock pools, you couldn't find oil. It was just
so
stunning.
Were you involved getting down onto the beach and cleaning yourself?
No, we were busy manning phones and assuring our customers that all was going to be fine, it was going to be cleared up. And at the same time, like a lot of hotels and guest houses, we suddenly became very busy for 2 weeks, partly because of the experts who were flown in to deal with it, but mostly because of the ghouls,
right,
who came along to look. And maybe it's harsh calling them ghouls, but it felt a bit like, you know, when you're driving along the road and there's been an accident and the police are waving you on and you can't help yourself but look as you pass. And some people drive slower and some people stop. And, you know, it's that sort of ghoulish behaviour. And I guess, like everybody else, I look as I pass, feeling guilty as hell. So there's a natural curiosity, and then there's the people who overextend that curiosity. And Tenby Hotels and Guest Houses had a bit of a sort of an early season flip because of all of these new people who'd come down to have a look at our crisis. Mm. So in some ways that helped deal
business
with the fact that we were going to, you know, lose money. And we did lose money.
You did lose money.
We did lose money, but we, like many others, submitted an application to the IOPC for compensation. Part of our claim was met by our insurance company because we had insurance for loss of business. And what wasn't covered by them was covered by the IOPC. So although we didn't come out with mega money, we came out with the sort of money that compensated us for the next 1/2 years loss of coach companies, group tours, who had cancelled. And that was the evidence of our claim. There are some people who did very well out of the compensation scheme and some people who did appallingly.
So at the time, were you managing the hotel?
Yeah, I rejoined the business in 1992, and in about 95 I became effectively the managing director. Mm. So there we are, 12 months into my managing bit.
Because Sharon was working here then.
Yeah, she was.
She told me about when she arrived for work that morning, and your father was I don't know if you were with him, but he was standing up by the railings looking down.
Yeah.
Can you just sort of describe how he felt at the time?
Not completely. I mean, we obviously talked about it, but I was there too. It was almost everybody suffered the same sort of massive lump in your throat and tears in your eyes. And at that stage, it hadn't even hit you about, you know, what's going to happen to our business. It was just the sheer scale of it and just the abuse of a pristine landscape by something which was completely unnatural.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, the tragedy of it all.
Did you think that we'll never recover from this?
No, I was in shock for about 2 days. Mm. Just, you know, struggling to believe it. Because whilst it was out there and hadn't arrived on our beaches in South Pembrokeshire, there was a sort of a thought that it might go sort of back out and it might go towards Devon and Cornwall, or it might end up on sort of Pendine or go off to the Gower or whatever it was. And you didn't really wish it upon anybody else, but you certainly didn't wish it upon yourself that it would land here. But once it had done that, obviously it's and you know, after a couple of days of being in shop and managed, we more or less managed to pick ourselves up and then started working with the agencies. Let's put in some sort of marketing campaign so that as soon as it looks clean, even if it's not necessarily clean, but as soon as it looks clean, then we can put it in gear and bravely go out and tell the world that, you know, our beaches are safe and clean and come back.
So can you just describe the kind of the scene down on the beach for me then, when all the people, so was it all local people who were cleaning?
Yeah, most went down the beach. Very few went down that far because it stank. It's also interesting watching the works over a number of weeks, because these great big heavy tractors and loads of farmers came along to help with their the sort of tanks you see them full of silage where they go spreading the muck on their fields. Loads and loads of tractors with these great tanks on trailers came down, because of course if you suck the oil in up, it's got to put it somewhere. And the tractors going backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards, and they'd work almost throughout the night. And some of them were these, I forget what you call them, these things with great big blades, which are bulldozers, that's the one. And they were bulldozing the sand in the harbour, because that had been the natural reservoir for a lot of it.
So they weren't burying it?
No. He was trying to bury it. They were trying to suck it out, but to get it, you had to move the sand at the top to get beneath it. After the first day or so, they managed to put a boom across most of it to keep the oil that was coming in the other side of the boom. And that sort of worked quite well. And interestingly, a lot of the lessons learned from the Sea Empress disaster cleanup campaign have been applied elsewhere in the world. And if you compare the cleanup campaign for the Sea Empress with one that had happened about 10 years before, called the Torrey Canyon.
Yeah.
Now, the Torrey Canyon didn't have nearly as much oil, but it made a hell of a lot more mess. And I think it's partly because of lessons they learned at the Torrey Canyon, but also they had some really clever stuff going on. And there are a lot of people who were strategically, I think, got it absolutely spot on. To the point where, even to this day, Forecroft continues to benefit, sort of, from the Sea Empress, because such was the good practice that even to this day, the Sea Empress cleanup campaign is heralded as, you know, a champion of good practice. And there's an organisation who are based in Southampton called the Oil Spill Response Crew, who have conferences two or three times a year where they bring people in to Forecroft Hotel in Tenby, and sometimes it's 10, sometimes it's 20. And two or three trainers, and they spend 4 days partly going around the beaches and looking at the pictures and discussing what they did, and partly having sort of in-conference discussions and presentations. And so, yeah, that's a sort of, bit of icing on
the cake. It's interesting because it's still a kind of living thing in some ways, isn't it? Because I know that without the Sea Empress disaster, in Nangle Bay, there was like a huge years and years of research that started from the before and after and how the economic climate has recovered. Yeah. And there are marine biologists that still teaching about it in universities as a method. And it's
has a legacy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not just the legacy of people who were there remembering their feeding, because I'm absolutely sure everybody who saw it the first day would have remembered. But it's a sort of a beneficial legacy. Look what happened. Let's not make the same mistake again. And I recall that was probably the last year where single hull oil tankers were used. The Sea Empress was a single hull oil tanker, and now all oil tankers are double hull for just such an event. That was the time where they had. Do you remember it's the SS. No, it's not the SS Great Britain. But they had a massive oil tanker ship, which had started operating, including the Milford Haven, about a year before, and this thing apparently took half a mile to stop. Such was its size. I think they've still got massive oil tankers they use, but they're all double-hulled. So there's an extra sort of element of safety. And in those days, of course, there wasn't a glut of oil, whereas these days, It's too much of the stuff refined, hence we're losing refineries. Yeah.
And there's tugboats, the right tugboats to bring them in.
Oh, God, yeah, there's the whole thing about the tugboat in the event of a crisis on the sea. You need tugboats to pull the ships off rocks or whatever. And there was a lot of pressure to retain a local tugboat around the South Wales coast. But we lost. I think the nearest tugboat is in Cornwall, isn't it? It's in whatever the harbour is at the end of Cornwall. Truro, that's where it is. Is it Truro? Yeah, I think it's Truro. Although, like all things modern, it's much faster than any other boat ever been beforehand. So it transpires, apparently. It's not that far away if it was called
in. Even in an emergency.
Even an emergency, apparently. But then, you know, it depends on how many you've got these things and how many are currently deployed. And can they drop that emergency to go to another emergency? Ah, I don't know. I'm so far not the technical person here.
So how long do you think it took before you felt it was it looked like it's or not well disappeared?
On most of the well used, therefore tourist orientated beaches, I reckon by June you'd have a job to spot any oil. If you're really looking for it, you'd find it in the rock pools. Certainly by August, people say,
and were people
oil?
Swimming?
Yeah. And also I remember, as again in response to it, there was due to be in Milford Haven the Celtic Water Sports Festival. And with about a week to go, the Port of Milford Haven decided that actually the water wasn't good enough quality, so they weren't going to do it. And I got dragged into that because at that point they decided they're going to run it in Tenby. So we had the Celtic Water Sports Festival in August for a week in Tenby. Now, August in Tenby is pretty chocker anyway.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it's one of the worst places it was hit. And it's...
Yeah, but then it was also one of the most publicised places, again, because of this tourist thing. And the County Council thought there was a huge opportunity of shouting to the world big time because we were hosting the Celtic Water Sports Festival. And that was great fun. I got pulled into that, so I had to organise some entertainment and volunteers and all sorts of things. And I guess that was the first time I ever organised any entertainment down in the harbour. And that was really good because there were 11 countries who'd sent their teams along, so they were living in places like Greenhill School and having fun every night. But during the daytime, for certainly 3 or 4 days, heavy duty water sports going on, so kayaking and rowing and sailing and I think they had swimming as well, actually.
So no long-term effects of the kind of pollution or anything? To...
Well, all sorts of people asked all sorts of questions about where the oil gone. There was one theory that oil naturally sinks after a while and that it's sitting in a trench at the bottom of the seabed. It certainly breaks up after the movement of the sea. After a while, there were slicks spotted at the back of Caldy for the rest of the summer, so people were very weary, but the seals came back and they seemed to have sort of survived it. Of course, there was huge loss of natural life, and the ones that everybody remembers were the seagulls and the gannets and the cormorants just oiled up, many of whom were supposedly rescued and brought off to animal rescue centres around. Many of them didn't survive, it just shock. And of course, many of them just didn't really get out of the water, they just got washed up in the sea every day. Tragic stuff. Yeah, but by the end of the summer, certainly August, you really wouldn't know. And the following year, it started the slow process of being forgotten about, although the compensation process took about 12 months, and for some people, it took 2 years, so they were obviously still thinking about it all. But yeah, about 3 years afterwards, I think it had sort of receded into a more comfortable part of the brain. Yeah, it's strange sort of clips of memory that sort of fleet through.
But so 20 years on,
yeah,
as you say, there's still a legacy.
It's an interesting one, because when Abby first mentioned it to me, before the project had really got off, she'd been pointed in my direction, because you know, people get pointed in my direction. And I wasn't overly sure I particularly wanted to remember the Sea Empress, because it's not the highlight of my life, nor is it the highlight of Tenby's existence. And whereas we never, ever, ever want to forget it, neither do we really want to dig it up again and go through the whole memory process if we can avoid it. But
there's a few people that have felt the same, that it's like, oh, revisiting old wounds.
And it's a very sore wound.
Yeah.
Excuse me one second. It's not a good thing having to remember it.
So does it make you feel emotional still?
Yeah. Tears still get to my eyes. That very vivid memory of standing and, you know, joining the community of Tenby and looking at our beach being taken over by brown moose is something to stick with me forever.
Yeah, it must have been really, really, I can't imagine it, because I wasn't here at the time. I was living away, so I just can't imagine that shock. And yeah. I can imagine it is devastating.
Yeah, and you know, you heard stories of this boat that was bouncing off the rocks from one side of the haven to another, and you thought, phew. Yeah, so. And then you heard stories of the oils begin to escape, and you thought, phew. Yeah, so. And you think, oh, it's all the way around there. Yeah, so so we never really envisaged it was going to come all the way around here. So when it did, it was an even bigger shock.
So, and were people really angry? Or just too shocked to even...
I think we were in mourning, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd lost our beautiful landscape. I don't know if people got really angry. Because at the end of the day, who would you get really angry with? It wasn't for months and months and months. In fact, it was years before they actually admitted what had gone wrong.
Yeah.
So we didn't really know, other than a boat was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm.
So who are we going to get angry with?
Yeah. And I imagine it's just a matter of all hands on deck, and let's just get on with it.
Well, see, that was an interesting thing as well. Mm. I mean, lots and lots of farmers were encouraged to bring their tractors and possibly a sort of their silage tankers, all for transporting away. But they turned to the rest of the public, please do not go on the beaches, because they're not safe, they are dangerous. As well as all this heavy plant going up and down and up and down and up and down 24 hours a day, it's just an unhealthy place to be with all the oil there. So please do not go on the beaches, which is, you know, unusual. And for a long, long time, we had signs on the railings all around town, please do not go on the beaches. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
Strange stuff. So there was a whole host of people who had volunteered, and a whole host of people who couldn't volunteer because they didn't have tractors or trailers or technical equipment, and we really wanted to do something. And there was nothing we could do.
Yeah.
And that was quite frustrating too.
Well, I keep thinking, what would it be like now? Because legislation, you wouldn't even be able to get near it now, would you?
Yeah, health and safety is worse than it was then. But yeah, you wouldn't want to go near it anyway.
No.
Just the smell.
Mm.
Yeah, dangerous stuff.
And what about in the town? What was it like in the town?
Well, again, because this influx of media and ghouls, town's quite busy.
People have talked about having to put stuff down on the floor because of all the...
Oh, yeah, I remember now. Yeah, you had to have... sort of, a lot of people used hay bales or hay, and virtually every threshold had some sort of anti-oil device. The hotel had a big, big special carpet inside the front door, so you came in, you had to walk over this carpet.
It's a bit like foot and mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if foot and mouth which had a more direct impact on people.
Mm.
You remind us of another tragedy. Oh, great, thanks.
I'm just here to get the tragedies. Let's get them over with, any more.
I have one lot of venting I can do a day. Yeah, the mats, and if you drove anywhere, if you went into somebody's house or whatever, I mean, a lot of farms were sort of off bound because the farmers weren't there, they were busy on the beach. And if you went up certain roads, there were hay all over the road, like foot and mouth, just to try to curtail the spread of the oil.
Yeah. And I was also told that because of a lot of builders and the plant machinery, there was a lot of jobs that were postponed for that.
because they were all volunteering. And it was deemed to be a priority. So as builders do, I mean, it's a bit like trying to get hold of a plumber in August. They're all fishing for bass because they can make more money fishing for bass than they can. Even with today's regulations about how many bass you can get, they seem still somehow to make more of a living out of fishing for bass in August than they do plumbing. I think it's probably was a bit like that. And it wasn't necessarily always because they felt that's what they had to do as volunteers. It was more, there was money to be earned. But I'm so not going to knock local government. It was the one time where Pembrokeshire County Council was just stunning. Just stunning. Their commitment was just brilliant.
Wow. Well, that's a rare thing to
hear. Very, isn't it? Very. I mean, there are parts of the county council I still very much respect, and there are people I still very much respect. But yes, you're right. The county council as a whole completely won the support of 95% of Pembrokeshire because of what they were doing. The other 5% were miffed because they weren't doing what they had been going to do because they were all busy on the beaches.
Right.
But you can't win all the games all the time. But yeah, they were truly great. Their commitment was just stunning. Really was.
So I'm just thinking if there's anything to add, really. So if things appear to have gone back to normal, there doesn't seem to be a huge ecological damage.
No, it's astonishing, isn't it? Here we are, 20 years after, and there is no way of telling.
No.
The whole of the natural world seems to have completely recovered from that, anyway. And the vast majority of people who come on holiday here have completely forgotten. Please don't remind them. 20 years is quite a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a long time. What's been interesting, though, about this project is a lot of people took a change of career, or their careers were directed as a direct result of the Sea Empress.
Were they?
We've talked to, there was a 16-year-old girl who now works for National Parks, decided to go into conservation because of it. I'm going to talk to somebody in Fishguard who set up the Sea Trust Centre as a direct result. I think a lot of people, it really raised awareness of the environment and conservation for a lot of people, and I think it was a really important event in their lives.
So they're probably quite glad to remember it. Well,
their kind of career choice has been as a result of it.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
There's always a happy ending.
The silver lining in the dark clouds, or is it dark brown mousse?
Chocolate mousse.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was perhaps the weirdest thing of it all. Is that everybody imagines oil is black. And it may well be black. But for a month it was definitely brown.
Mm. Well, there's been a walk and talk last Saturday. We're on a walk and talk with Ginny's husband, John. I don't know. And he basically gave us a demonstration of the type of oil and what it happens in water, and talk to us about how it affected it. It was the different type of oil in different parts of the coast, and by the time it got to Tenby, it'd be kind of churned over and turned into, it has been described as chocolate mousse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is better for the environment for Tenby because it had been more dispersed, I suppose. But I don't know.
I don't know either. I think, chocolate mousse, but unfortunately that really does cause a sort of a stomach wrench, doesn't it? Because I quite like chocolate mousse.
Yeah, it's never been on the menu since.
No, I still eat chocolate mousse quite a lot, but if I started thinking about, oh, that's the Empress, then I'll probably never eat any more ever again in my whole life.
Yeah, I imagine it would be something you just would never forget.
No. No, and you know, it's the 30th anniversary. I hope there's less coverage of it, and the 40th less coverage again, but I guess I'm going to remember February. It's, wow. Mm. Yeah.
Right. I think we'll end it there.
Yeah.